Sure Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Well, shalom again, everyone. I'm Bill Cloud, and I want to welcome you to our program today. We will be continuing in the series that we're calling Unto One Flesh. And the point and the goal of this teaching is not to just relate a history of some things that have happened in the past, in other words, the story of the first man and the first woman, but more importantly, to see in that story, in the different components of that story, how the Creator paints a picture for us that relates to our day and our time, specifically as it relates to the restoration of all things. Because we understand, going back to some previous programs, that Peter tells us that the restoration of all things is revealed to us through the mouth of all of his holy prophets, and he's been doing this since the world began. So that's the goal we have in relating this to you. Now, in the last program, we were talking about the fact that the pictures that are painted and through the man and the woman, these two bodies, and how that relates to the Messiah came to die, not just for the Jewish nation, but that he would gather together in one the people of God who were scattered abroad, and that he would bring these two and he would make them one. And when that happens, then that one body in the man and the woman can then begin to produce fruit, produce offspring. And so, spiritually speaking, that's what the restoration of all things is. When the two become one and they start producing offspring, building his house, everything's put back where it's supposed to be. Now, in the scriptures, it tells us that God said that it's not good for man to be alone. And we were relating to at the end of the last program how the word that is translated, it's not good for him to be alone, implies that in a negative way, that he's isolated. He is cut off from the main body, so to speak. But in a positive connotation, it is to suggest that he is a portion of something. He is a component of something. In fact, one commentary even makes it akin to the branch of a tree. In other words, he is the branch of a tree, and it's not good for him to be alone, and so there needs to be another branch of a tree, so to speak. Let's read now from Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. It says this, "And the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone." And again, that word alone is to imply the component of something as well as being isolated. And then he goes on and he says, "And I will make him a helper comparable to him." Now, that's the way it reads in New King James. Other translations relate it that I will make him a helpmeet or a helpmate, etc. But I want to tell you what it says in Hebrew, because the Hebrew phrase that I want to show you here on the screen that is translated helpmate is ezer kenegdo. Ezer, the first word, again reading from right to left, is to help, or in this case, a helper. The word ke, it's the letter kaf there. It means like or unto, something like that. And then negedo is from the word nagid. Nagid means opposite. And when it says negedo, it's literally his opposite. So here's what the Hebrew says. It's not good for man to be by himself. I will make him an help opposite. I will make him a helper who is opposite him. Now, on one level, what that seems to be saying is that God's going to make him someone, a body, that's going to help him, and they will be the opposite of him. For instance, he's male, this will be female. Males have a different way of looking at things. Females look at the same issue totally different. I know that years ago, when I was first married, the things that I thought that if I did would please my wife, buy her flowers, buy her this, buy her that, she didn't refuse them, but those were not the things that made her the happiest. What I found out was that, where my wife is concerned anyway, the things that made her happiest is when I would take out the garbage, or when I would do, you know, some little menial chore like this that she didn't have to do, and that would generate a lot more affection from her than if I bought her a dozen roses. And so I remember thinking, you know, we look at things totally different. What I think would please her is not really the thing that pleases her the most, and the things that I wouldn't even consider would have anything to do with pleasing her or what pleased her the most. And as I've gone around the country and shared some stories related to that with different congregations and groups, I have found that most women respond the same way. They say, that's absolutely right. What's the point? Men look at things differently than women do. They have a different perspective. They're female. This is the way the Creator designed it. And so in one regard, he says, I'm going to make him a helper who is opposite him, looks at things totally different. She even looks different, even though it's not hard to tell that man and woman are of the same species. It's just that there are different features, and they're there for a different reason. They have different perspectives of issues, but that's there for a reason. Because when they come together as one, then the family, then the house, then the body, so to speak, is whole. It's complete. Because both of these perspectives are coming together as one. Both of these strengths and weaknesses are coming together as one. And when they come together as one, then and only then can they be fruitful. Can they multiply? Can they build the house, so to speak? Now, another aspect of this term, ezer kenegedo, is it could be rendered, and has in some translations of in Judaism, his help opposite. Or, let's put it this way, his helper who opposes him. Now, when we think of opposition, typically we think of someone who is against us, someone who wants to fight us, someone who wants to destroy us, etc. But in this regard, the woman opposes him, but by opposing him, helps him. Now, how do you make sense out of that? Well, let's go back to my household. When me and my wife got married, both of us can be headstrong. Both of us have strengths. Both of us have weaknesses. And in my marriage, I've noticed that when I have lost focus, when I've gotten out of line, when I haven't really been focused on what's really important at times. In fact, sometimes I get so focused and fixated on the work that I forget to do the guarding. And so that's when my help opposite, my wife, comes in and she opposes me. She doesn't oppose me to undermine my spiritual authority as the head of the house. She doesn't oppose me to destroy me. She opposes me when it's necessary because she sees my weakness and how my weakness is leading me to go off in this direction or that direction. So she opposes me not to usurp my spiritual authority as the head of the house, but she opposes me to provoke me to assert my authority as the spiritual head of the house, because when I go off stray and get out of line, I am allowing that spiritual authority to be compromised in some way. So let me make this clear for all you ladies out there who are chomping at the bits right now. I'm not saying that women oppose their husbands in order to take over. No. The woman was made from a rib taken from the man's side, which is to say she is to walk at his side, not as slave nor as master, but to be and to function in the way and in the characteristics that God designed the woman for, to be a helper who at times has to help him by opposing him. Now then, when we look at this as being a prophetic picture, what we see is a body, a man, Adam, formed from the dust of the earth. He is alone, and it's not good for him to be alone, perhaps because of his weaknesses. But the Creator causes him to fall into a deep slumber. He falls into an unconscious state. In fact, literally in Hebrew, what it says is he caused him to fall down. And when he falls down into this unconscious state, he is unaware of what's going on around him. And so it's at this time that God comes and he removes a rib from his side. Now, if he removes a rib from his side, that is going to mean he's going to have to cut into his side. And so he cuts into his side, and the scripture tells us that he closed the flesh there. He closed it up, which means he had to open it first. And then notice the scripture does not say that God went out and scooped up some more dirt, made another body, and breathed the breath of life into that body. That's not what it says. it says that from that rib, or shall we say, from that remnant that he removes from Adam, who is the original body, who needs someone as a companion, who is seemingly going to oppose him, but that opposition only comes as an aid, as a help, to help him to be what he is supposed to be. Because by himself, he's incomplete. Now, it would seem to suggest that if by himself he's incomplete, then likewise, by herself, she's incomplete. She has strengths, he has strengths. He has weaknesses, she has weaknesses. And chances are, where he's weak, she's strong. And where she's weak, he's strong. And so when the two come together as one, then they are whole. Then they are complete. Then they are the way they are supposed to be. Now, when it talks about how he built the woman, or from the rib he made this woman, the Hebrew word is actually literally to be interpreted as he built the woman. Remember, in earlier programs, we talked about how a man builds his house. He doesn't do it with wood and stone and mortar and nails and these things. A man builds his house by taking a wife. Likewise, God builds his house by taking a wife. And so in the first man and the first woman, we see something being played out for us. Yes, it is something that actually happened a long time ago. But it's not just a history of what happened a long time ago. Because we understand, according to Ecclesiastes 3:15, according to Isaiah 46, verses 8, 9, and 10, what happened a long time ago, and I'm paraphrasing, is the pattern for what's going to happen today and what's going to happen tomorrow. He reveals the end from the beginning. And so in the first man, being a body that he formed from the dust of the earth, breathed the breath of life in, gave him the ability, empowered him to function in his purpose, he then places in him a garden, a sanctuary to work it and to guard it. Meaning that when he breathed the breath of life into him, he had the ability to do these things. But at the same time, he understands and acknowledges it's not good for man to be alone. Now, my question at this point is, when God formed the man, made him from the dust of the earth, breathed the breath of life into him, and made him a living soul, after he'd done all of this, did he go, oops, I left something out. It's not good for man to be alone. I didn't think this thing through. Is that what we should get from this? I don't think so. Because he established the world because of his wisdom. I mean, he planned it all out. So I think when he says, it's not good for man to be alone, and we take into consideration what that word alone really implies, he doesn't need to be a single branch of a tree. It's not to say that God overlooked something or didn't think it through. I believe it's there to cause us to go search the Scriptures and see what it is the Scriptures are trying to hint at for us. And so he says, I'll make him a help opposite. I'll make him a helper who seemingly opposes him. But again, not to undermine him, not to usurp him, but to walk alongside him. And where he's weak, I'll be strong. And where I'm weak, he'll be strong. And together, as one, we'll complement one another. But in order to accomplish this, God has to call the original body to fall into an unconscious state. And while they're in that unconscious state, removes a remnant from that body. And from that body builds another body. And then resuscitates, resurrects, whatever words you'd like to use, the man. He becomes conscious of things that just before he couldn't see. And so when he puts these two together as one, they are going to be building his house. And by that I mean God's house. And prophetically speaking, it's a picture of how God is going to build his house through the Messiah who comes to die, is buried and resurrected on the third day. Again, after he died, remember what the Roman soldier did. He threw a lance into his side, opened up his side. But because of that wound in his side, because he went to the tree, expired, and rose again, that made it possible for me and for you, those of us who are of this other branch, this wild branch, to be grafted in to this already existing family tree, contrary to nature, but nonetheless to become part of this family through the commitment of the Messiah. Now, when Adam awoke from his slumber, here's what he said, verse 23 and 4 of chapter 2 in Genesis. He says, "And Adam said, 'This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined unto his wife, and they shall become one flesh.'" And so in this verse we see, again, not just a historical record of something that happened 6,000 years ago, but because the Father reveals the restoration of all things through the mouth of all of His holy prophets since the world began, here is one of the first examples of how He is telling us about the restoration of all things, what it is, what it looks like. It looks like this. There's a body that was designed to do certain things, to function a certain way. But He decided, that is the Creator, that it was not good for it to be alone. And so He caused that body to fall into a slumber. And when they were in their slumber, removed a remnant, as I've already said, and with that rib makes another body and resuscitates the original body, brings the two together, makes them one, and it's acknowledged by the original body, Adam, that this woman is bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, and the two shall become one, and they will become, in Hebrew, levasar echad, or unto one flesh. That's how it was in the beginning, the two becoming one. That's how it will be at the end. Now, I want to look at something here in Hebrew in just a moment, but I want you to think about the concept of opposite again. Again, we kind of think of opposite as opposing in the sense of destruction, destroying, that kind of thing. And it can be. But that is not the way it's given to us here in the very beginning. As a matter of fact, the very first word, once again, in all of the Hebrew scriptures is Bereshit. And that means in the beginning. It begins with the letter called Beit. And Beit means a house, but Beit is also has a value attached to it. In fact, it has the value of two. And two is understood to be the beginning of plurality. In fact, it's really to suggest opposites, because you can't have life until you have opposites. Again, we look at opposites as being a negative thing, and it can be. But opposites are required if you're going to have life. And so the man wakes up and he sees his opposite. But now his opposite existed at least for a little while, and I'm presuming this, before he was resuscitated, before he was came back to consciousness, so to speak. Before that, while she's being built, while she's being formed, he's oblivious to everything that's going on. And in that, I think there's a prophetic component as well. So when he wakes up, when he comes to consciousness, he sees this other body that came out of him. He recognizes that she came out of him and says, bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. But here's what I want you to see. The Hebrew word for bone that's translated here for us is the word etzem. And it's spelled ein zadeh mem, etzem. Now, here's why I want you to see that, because I want to put up another word for you to look at. And that is the word that is pronounced etz. And the word etz means tree. And that one is spelled ayin zadeh. So now listen to me very carefully. Etzem, bone, is spelled ayin zadeh mem. The word etz, tree, is spelled ayin zadeh. In other words, the letters ayin zadeh are common to these two words. Phonetically, the word for bone in Hebrew is at the very least similar, if not equivalent, to the word for tree in Hebrew. In fact, the word that is translated flesh is the word basar. But basar, flesh, is also the Hebrew word that gives us the word besorah, which in Hebrew means good news or gospel. So allow me to look beyond the surface of the text and what Adam is saying and present to you the prophetic component of this. The original body, who has just been resuscitated from his slumber, sees another body that looks a lot like him but doesn't look exactly like him. Very similar but very distinct. He looks at this other body who has a totally different perspective than he does, and yet he realizes that her perspective came out of him, and that it's only going to be possible for us to produce life when we come together as one, because we belong together. We're supposed to be one flesh. And so he says, bone of my bone, or let's put it this way, tree of my tree, or even better, her branch of a tree and my branch of a tree should come together as one tree. We're not to exist apart from one another. Can a man live without a woman? Can a woman live without a man? To a certain degree. But can they produce life? No, they cannot. So he's saying, her branch and my branch go together. Or let's put it this way. My natural branch and that wild branch actually are supposed to be part of the same tree. But for so long, people didn't see it that way. For so long, people saw the natural branch has its own existence and the wild branch has its own existence, and east is east and west is west and ever the twain shall meet. But that's not what the Father tells us from the beginning. The way He designed it was that these two seeming opposites both possess strengths, they both possess weaknesses, but as long as they remain apart, neither one of them will ever produce life. It's always been intended from the beginning that the two should become one. And so he's saying this tree, this branch, this woman, her branch and my branch should become one. And her flesh is of my flesh. The word basar, which gives us the word besorah, gospel or good news, he seems to be hinting that when these two branches become one, her good news is not something foreign to me, but her message came out of the message I present. And so when we come together as one flesh, levesar or basar, we're going to come together as one body. And when we come together as one body, we're going to have one message, because there's only one house. There's only one faith. There's only one baptism. There's only one Lord of all. And this is what has been declared to us from the beginning. And so in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, once again it says, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined. And that word literally means to cleave to or to be glued to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Never to be divided. What God has joined together, let no one divide asunder. That's not just talking about what we tend to make it, you know, a marriage. Yes, it applies to that. But thinking prophetically, when God joins these two together, they're never going to be divided again. And so here's the prophetic picture, ladies and gentlemen. This isolated branch, this original body who's given a mandate, who's given an objective, and he's given the talents, and he's given the abilities, and he's given the empowerment to do what God created him to do. Nevertheless, the Creator determines it is not good for him to be alone. And so he does cause him to fall into a slumber. Of course, this original body I'm talking about is the natural branch, if you will. Those who were ethnically Israel, who were given a mandate to be a light to the nations. But we see throughout history that Israel kept coming up short. And so the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And the Messiah, because of His commitment to see the Father's purposes fulfilled, He willingly goes to a tree where He's hung. And after He expires and gives up His spirit, a lance pierces His side. But that wound in His side represents those wounds that made it possible for a remnant that was taken from that original body. Because what were all the early believers? They were all ethnically Israel. But with that small remnant, what did he do? He built another body. And as time passed by, that body, as it took on shape, it looked different, acted different, had a different perspective. But it was never intended that those two remain separate and apart. It was already determined by the death, burial, and the resurrection of the Messiah that the two would become one flesh. Because he didn't die just for that nation only, but that he would also gather together in one the people of God who were scattered abroad, you and me. And so here is what we see. In the very beginning, the restoration is when these two come together as one flesh. The restoration of all things is defined as this: the two becoming one. Messiah got the process started, and now we are living in the time when all of these things are beginning to come to pass. But we'll have to wait till next week to continue. I hope you'll join me. Until then, I'm Bill Cloud. Shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a Bill Cloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.